Right now, please welcome back to Minnesota Matter, David Morris, the Vice President of Institute for Local Self-Reliance. Good evening, Mr. Morris.
Hi, Mark.
Well, they gave you a lot of space in the Star and Tribune today.
Yes, I was thrilled. Nice layout, huh?
Yeah, exactly. It's a great layout, great article. What was the need, do you think, to write this this article on capping emissions at this time?
Well, I think that people need to know, you know, in Minnesota, that there was legislation passed that sets as a goal significant emission reductions and sets in process a group that is supposed to come next February with legislative proposals to the legislature. So something is happening in Minnesota, and one can be skeptical about what the end result will be, but the point is that something is going to be presented to the legislature. And the reason that I wrote the piece was that in our kind of inimitable manner, we've set up a kind of Rube Goldberg structure with a 50-member advisory group, all very good people who have broken themselves down into six subgroups, which are then winnowing through several hundred proposals and recommendations, and will come out the other side with probably 50 to 75 recommendations to the legislature. And the recommendations can be everything from increasing renewable energy to imposing a carbon tax to increasing fuel efficiency standards, improving building codes and the like. And the reason that I wrote the piece, along with Peter Barnes, who is one of the founders of Working Assets, and Peter Barnes is wrote a book most recently called Capitalism 3.0. But the reason that the two of us wrote this was that we wanted to make sure that Minnesotans didn't get lost in the thickets, that we didn't lose the forest for the trees and didn't keep going down roads of we're going to improve this a little bit, we're going to improve this a little bit, we're going to try a thousand things, because in essence, the only way that you can guarantee that you're going to have emission reductions is to insist that you have emission reductions. And that means that you have a cap. That is, you say, we will only allow a certain amount of carbon emissions this year and then ratchet it down each year to meet your goal. That's the only way that you can guarantee it. And so that is, I mean, everything else should be in some ways off the table if I could, but certainly subsidiary. And that is, should be the focus of what are the mechanics of this cap, and it raises very interesting questions as we investigate that.
So of all these 50, 70, 100 different proposals that this panel will come back with, this capping should be number one. That will be the most effective in doing that?
Yes, it'll be the only effective in doing that. As it is right now, it's one of 50. But, you know, if you think about it, if you raise, let's say you doubled the building code efficiency, so every new building had to be twice as efficient. Let's say every new car had to be twice as efficient. Let's say that every new power plant had to be twice as efficient. Well, in 50 years, because we would have more houses and more cars and more miles driven and more electric consumption, you would end up probably about stabilizing your greenhouse gas reductions. But we're asking for a dramatic 60 to 80% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. So the only way you can do that is really to insist on it. And that's why it should be not only number one, but it should be really what everyone is focusing on. And the mechanics of a carbon cap lead to some interesting questions, because, you know, everybody talks about, well, let's have a cap, let's have greenhouse gas emissions reductions and the like. But really what we're doing is we're putting a value on something. That is, we're putting a market value on something that previously didn't have a value, because we are now saying you've got to get a permit or an allowance to emit, you know, carbon dioxide or to burn carbon. And that in and of itself puts a value on it. And then the question becomes, and this is a critical question, who should benefit from that value? We've now created value on something, and who should get that value? And here, the polluters in Europe, for example, 3 years ago when they did this in a very, what turned out to be a very poor way, the polluters said, hey, give us the allowances. In other words, if we're an electric power company and we generate X amount of pollution this year, then give us the right free to generate that amount of pollution this year, and then the next year tell us we've got to do 2% less, and the next year we've got to do 2% less, and so forth. And they did that, and what turned out was that this became a multi-billion-dollar bonanza to the polluters, and you didn't get very much reduction from it at all. So what a number of people are saying is, why don't we start with basic principles? The sky belongs to all of us equally. That is, you know, we've got a biosphere up there, and we're polluting it.
A clean sky belongs to all of us, or free from these emissions.
That's right, a sustainable sky. I mean, we're not banning carbon dioxide emissions. We can't. It's part of the natural cycle. What we're doing is saying we can emit a certain amount because the biosphere can absorb and recycle that certain amount, but we're exceeding that. So we got to get back to a sustainable amount. So there's a quota, if you will, on emissions. And now the question is, well, shouldn't that quota then be shared equally by everybody on the planet? I mean, why should one person be able to use 10 times more or emit 10 times more? And I think we'd all agree with that as a matter of principle. Now, how do we make that principle manifest? And the answer is that you auction off these emissions. In other words, that people who would emit or companies that would emit would have to purchase the right to emit a ton of emissions. And then the money that comes from that would be distributed on a per capita basis to everybody. And so what, you know, then happens is that that the marketplace, if you will, gets a signal from all of this because the price of goods then goes up because the price of energy goes up. But the individual household gets a dividend back. And so if you're a household that uses less than the average, you're going to get back more. And if you use more than the average, you're going to pay out more. And it happens that low-income people, for example, and that's the first issue that people tend to raise, use less than half. Some argue is they use 25% of the, that is, they generate 25% of the carbon emissions of middle-class people and richer people. And so if they get back an equal amount, but they only pay higher costs on 25% of that amount, then there actually you have a redistribution of income. So we wrote the piece in order to present three principles that people, you know, people go to our website, newrules.org. They can download and read it. But we basically offered three principles that should guide the deliberation of the advisory board, and a call to all Minnesotans to get involved, because something, I mean, it may end up that nothing comes out the other end because it's all too modest, if you will, but the legislation requires that the legislature next year chew very heavily on this issue, and other states are moving in the same direction.
Now, that was going to be my next question. Have there been states that have instituted this type of comprehensive emissions cap?
No, but there are states, and then there is the region of New England that have instituted the beginnings of caps, and they focused it on the electric power industry. And California, just a few days ago, came out with its final recommendations for a comprehensive cap. So this is all relatively new, and we're sort of moving into this, sort of learning as we go.
And have they found success with those first beginnings of this type of program?
Well, it's just beginning.
Yeah.
You know, and so, I mean, literally we're talking about things that are just moving into the first phase, which means that you'll know whether it's effective the next time somebody tries to build a power plant in the electric sector. But what we're arguing is that you shouldn't just look at the electricity sector. It should be comprehensive. I mean, after all, it should deal with our cars. It should deal with our buildings and the like. And this is a technical point that I'm about to say, but it's the kind of thing that some of your listeners may be interested in terms of, you know, operationalizing this philosophical principle, is that if you impose if you require that the auction, that the permits be purchased by the suppliers of fossil fuels rather than the consumers of fossil fuels. In other words, if you impose this on the electric power company, they consume fossil fuels and they emit carbon dioxide. But if you impose it on the suppliers of coal and the suppliers of oil and the suppliers of natural gas, that is upstream, you impose that, then everyone downstream pays those costs, which means it becomes comprehensive. If I have a building and I'm heating it with natural gas, I have a car that uses oil, I'm an electric power plant that uses coal, we all then pay those downstream costs. So a basic, although it's a, as I said, it's sort of technical, if you will, but, you know, where do you impose this particular auction? So right now, what's going on in the states, and Congress is going to debate this fall, is the issue of, number one, should we impose a mandatory cap? That's number one. Number two, if we do impose that cap, how should the allowances be distributed? Should people have to pay for them, or should they be given away? Number three, if the allowances have to be paid for, how should that money be distributed, and so forth? And so these are very fundamental principles. In the case of Minnesota, a minimum amount that we'd be talking about generating in terms of revenue from this auction in the first year is $800 million. And it could be twice that. Now, that's in 1 year. You know, usually our legislative sessions talk about biennial budgets. So, I mean, if you think about it, a biennial budget, it would be a $1.5 billion to $2 billion. That's real money.
Yeah, exactly. David, I have a question to you about implementing this program and watching over it. What kind of costs are we looking at? And practically, is it possible to keep track of a company who's bought so many units of emissions? How do you monitor that? How do you know that they aren't exceeding the amount that they're allowed?
Well, now that is true. That is very difficult, which is why people are focusing. If you focus on emissions, people are looking at the electric power sector, where it's relatively easy. You have a few hundred power plants. You have, you know, three or four or five generating companies, and you actually have their emissions monitored because of air pollution standards. And so, you know, you can do that. But when it comes to cars, when it comes to buildings, when it comes to all the other things, manufacturers and so forth, you know, how do you monitor that? And what Peter Barnes and I say is the way to deal with that is to impose it upstream. And so you're imposing it when the oil comes into the process and is burned. You oppose it when the coal comes in, when the natural gas comes in. Now then you say, well, you know, how do you do that and how do you monitor that? And that becomes a practical question. But for the case of Minnesota, a large percentage of our oil is refined in a few refineries. And so the refineries would be the ones that would basically pay the auction, and they would pass it up to the people supplying them with oil. In the case of natural gas, it comes in by pipelines, and there are a few places in which the pipelines are plugged into. So you can do this administratively much simpler if you do it on the suppliers of fossil fuels than if you tried to do it and monitor it on all the emissions that came out of the burning of those fossil fuels.
Yeah, I have an image of a guy having to stand on top of one of the smokestacks holding out a machine to measure what's coming out of there.
Yeah, or your tailpipe, for that matter.
Yeah,
exactly. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, brings up some unique problems. David Morris is our guest. He's the Vice President of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, talking about his proposal for capping emissions here in the state of Minnesota. If you have questions, you can join us at 952-946-6205. Call online 952-946-6205. Did I jump in on you, Mr. Morris?
Not at all. I mean, people can go, as I said, to our website, newrulesoneword.org, and download the editorial. And if they want the group that's discussing this right now, that's legislatively required to discuss this in Minnesota, is the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Council, and they have a website, mnclimatechange.us, and so people can go there as well.
All right. Well, we do have some questions for you. I want to get back. I also want to ask you a little bit more about this panel and the political realities of whether or not something like this can pass. But we'll go off to a break. You have questions, 952-946-6205.
According to NASA, indoor plants are the most efficient means of removing air pollution. Hi, I'm John Hansen from Hansen Tropical Plant Rental. Indoor plants are the least expensive employee benefit you can buy. My rental service is a great way to add beautiful indoor greenery. You get all the benefits of beautifully maintained plants without the hassle or dirty work. Call 612-709-0107 for a no-cost home or business consultation. Find out what Hansen Tropicals can do for you.
Wednesday on the Ed Schultz Show, Senator Barack Obama says his rivals, their position on Iraq is just too little too late. The senator from Illinois and Democratic candidate who's raised over $30 million in the last quarter will join us on the program. And the White House says we need to wait until September on Iraq. Does America have that patience? We'll discuss it. We'll have your calls and the latest news Wednesday on the Ed Schultz Show.
The Ed Schultz Show, live 11 to 2 on AM 950, Air America, Minnesota.
If someone you know is struggling with addiction, you can't just look the other way. The licensed, qualified, professional staff at Addiction Recovery Professionals have the knowledge and resources to support you through all stages of recovery, from evaluation, intervention, to counseling. Call 651-491-2132 to talk to an Addiction Recovery Professional today. That's 651-491-2132. Get the facts online at arprecovery.com and start the journey from addiction to wellness.
When you want clean, think green. Think Aaron's Green Cleaning, where a little elbow grease leaves your house sparkling green clean. With the top-notch cleaning staff and the highest quality products, Aaron's Green Cleaning is the premier eco-friendly cleaning company in the Twin Cities. And yes, they hand wash floors too. Licensed, bonded, and insured. Online at aaronsgreencleaning.com. Get your home sparkling green clean with Aaron's Green Cleaning. Call 612-386-2793 or online at aaronsgreencleaning.com.
Are you a weekend do-it-yourselfer? United Rentals will go the extra mile to help. Stop by your local branch, call 800-UR-RENTS, or visit unitedrentals.com. United Rentals, consider it done.
It's just dirty stuff, and you all laugh so stupidly like a bunch of idiots, and I'm sorry to have to tell you this.
I appreciate you listening. And you know what? It might be even stupider tomorrow, so I would keep listening.
God's sake.
The Stephanie Miller Show, weekday mornings from 8 to 11 on AM 950, Air America, Minnesota.
Welcome back to Minnesota Matters. I'm Mark Haney. We're at 10 to the hour. We have with us David Morris, Vice President of the Institute of Local Self-Reliance. And we also have Larry Korb coming up at the top of the hour. He's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. He'll be on to talk about Bush's latest attempt to quell GOP concerns on Iraq after Baghdad's missed all 18 benchmarks. So that's all coming up in the second hour of Minnesota Matters. Right now we're talking to David Morris. If you have questions for him on his emissions cap program, you can give us a call at 952-946-6205. We have Dave and Karen holding, Dave, but before we do that, I want to just ask you one last question. Political realities of getting something like this passed here in Minnesota.
Well, the political realities are low. But 2 years ago, there was no reality to the conversation at all. And now we have legislation that passed this last year. We have Congress that is going to have legislation proposed this coming year. So I think that what we're in the stage now is we're beyond the stage in which we're discussing whether there's global warming, and we're beyond the stage at which we're discussing whether we're going to do something about it, and we're now at the stage of deciding whether what we're going to do about it. And that's political, you know, if you will, sort of face-to-face, you know, arm-to-arm kind of wrestling. And what I want is that we don't get lost in this thicket while the polluters sort of write the rules, and that we know what it is we want and keep our eyes on the prize. And that's why we wrote this piece.
Yeah, well, I enjoy the piece, and I also enjoy your guys' website, newrules.org, just because it has big ideas, new ways of doing things. It's not, your feet aren't stuck in the mud. You're moving forward and trying to come up with some new ideas. And I think that's missing from the political discourse now.
Thank you.
So it is a great site. I encourage people to go to it, newrules.org. Let's go to some callers here. We'll start with Dave in St. Paul. Welcome to the program, Dave.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
I have to address two concerns that I have. As stands, I can't see where this is going to cost anybody but the end consumer, simply because, for instance, my utility bill. I went over it today. In resource charges and essentially the energy cost and the cost to get it to me, I paid roughly $86. My utility bill was $122. They have fees and taxes that are just absolutely out of this world. The taxes alone, including the City of St. Paul city fee on my utilities, was 20%. Without any sort of regulation on these companies, they will just simply pass down that resource down to us.
They will, but it brings up a good question. I mean, if I rephrase your question, there's sort of two comments that you're making. You know, one is that the actual energy cost of what you're paying, at least on your utility bill, is relatively small. So if you raise that, you don't raise your utility bill that much, and it's not going to change your behavior. The second point that you make is that they're just going to pass all this through. The second point is true, and the first point is true, that they are going to pass this through. That's why, I mean, we are going to all pay higher prices, which is why you want this redistributed down, so the person with the 5,000 square foot house with central air conditioning and seven cars, you know, pays more, and the person that doesn't have a car and uses mass transit and has a small house and it's an efficient house, you know, will get back more money than they.
My second statement is that I looked at that and I thought, well, geez, why don't I just go wind source? Then I would knock the fuel charge out. They still charge you for the fuel charge. How could they possibly charge me for wind?
Well, we're talking about two different things now.
But what I'm saying is, if you have a cap,
I mean, we're talking about two different things. If you have a cap and you ratchet it down, you will get, in fact, emissions reductions. What you're talking about is, well, let's say we get emissions reductions, but my bill goes up. You know, that I use wind, and so we're not generating any emissions, but my bill goes up. I say, well, yes, your bill will go up. But the problem we're trying to solve is emissions reductions, and we've already agreed that we want to move in that direction, and the question is, how do we do that? And the redistribution formula is a way to make that as equitable as possible, but yes, still paying.
All right. Thanks so much, Dave, for calling in. Appreciate that call. Let's go to Karen in Bloomington. Welcome to the program, Karen.
Thank you. Well, I think what David is saying, and if people listen to David Morris, the world would be a much better place.
What a compliment.
I do have a question, and that's the latest statistics are that we add 9,000 people per hour to our planet due to exponential human population growth. And I don't see how, when you do the math, if it's the whole supply-demand thing, with all your great ideas and all the caps, and I agree with them 1,000%, how do we truthfully reduce global warming gases when we keep adding 9,000 people per hour to our planet, and they are going to in turn demand, even if they are very efficient at what they do, even if all these programs are in place, how does that get addressed?
Well, I mean, I think that there's, once again, there's two questions on the table. If you ratchet down greenhouse gas emissions, there is going to be pain, but there's going to be fewer greenhouse gas emissions. If you increase population, then one might argue that that we're all going to be impoverished because of this, so that the population problem becomes an important issue. And I actually have there is a solution to the population problem, and you know, this is going to be glib because it's just a few seconds, but when women are allowed to control their bodies, population goes down. That's the experience
in
every country, in every country for the last 40 years that has allowed that to happen. In fact, in some countries, it went down so precipitously, like in France, that they began to provide incentives for babies, for people to have them. And the single thing that's stopping women from controlling their own bodies is organized religion. And I'm talking about all the major organized religions. The solution we know, and the obstacle we also know. And that's how one, you know, addresses the population problem.
What a good question, Karen. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. David, interesting question. Do you hear that one a lot, though, about the population? We hear about it in the shows earlier on in the day here on the program. They've talked about it before. Tom Hartman talks about it. Is population going to be a big concern?
No, I don't think so. Okay. I mean, I think that, you know, population does come up, and it's true, it does come up, and the population is growing, although it's growing far slower than it was growing before. And in the case of the United States, the population is growing because of immigration and not natural growth. In the case of Europe, the population is going down. Overall, we know what, as I said before, we know what the solution to this problem is, which isn't to say that it's not a problem. It certainly is one, but it's less of a problem in terms of growth rates than it was, you know, 25 or 30 years ago. And unlike 25 or 30 years ago, we now have an enormous amount of experiential information as to how we address it.
How do we get you put on this panel that the legislature's forming? I mean, why aren't you on this panel? How is the panel being selected?
Well, it was selected. It was selected last December, actually, before the legislation was actually passed, and so the train began to leave the station last fall. But I don't care in some ways one way or another. I think that what's more important is not whether I'm on the panel, but whether people in Minnesota try to participate in this. I mean, we just had this Live Earth concert, and there were purportedly 2 billion people watching, and presumably that means there were more than 12 people watching in Minnesota too. Mm-hmm. And so what is it that one's going to do about that? Well, you can change your individual behavior and buy a hybrid and so on and so forth, but right now, if you act as a citizen, not as a consumer, but as a citizen in Minnesota, there is a process that's going on. And what I'm saying is that if people go in there with very clear demands, we want a cap. It is comprehensive in its nature. It is statewide in its nature. It is ratcheted down. And the revenue that's generated from selling those allowances and those permits has to be used in a fashion that's universal and egalitarian, because everybody owns an equal piece of the biosphere.
All right. Well, a great note to end on. And David Morris, we're going to keep having you back as this process continues.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. David Morris, Vice President, Institute for Local Self-Reliance. You can get more information on his organization at newrules.org. When we get back from the break, we'll have Larry Corbin. He's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. He'll talk to us about Bush's latest attempt to quell GOP concerns on Iraq after Baghdad missed all 18 benchmarks. Stay tuned.